welcome to another episode of Multiverse Musings, a DC Comics podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam, and with me is my co-host, Jordan. Jordan, how are you?
Well, I haven't had hot water for the past 3 days, so that's kind of sucked. I've had to take cold-ass showers, but other than that, I am pretty good. We are 119 days away from the Bat-Cat wedding as of this episode releasing. As of when we expect it to release anyway, I should add that caveat because there's one instance where we expected it to be released one day and I gave the wrong number of days. But yes, 119 days as of when we expect this to be released. I'm doing pretty well overall, man. How about you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing really well. Keeping on doing my thing and awaiting the next. Actually, I'm awaiting the DC shows coming back, or some of them coming back this week.
Hell yeah. Well, as we're recording this, yeah.
Yeah, as we're recording.
We had Legends last week, and that was it. And now we've got pretty much everything.
No, well, we have Black Lightning and Gotham, which I'm excited about, March 1st.
Yeah, Gotham's back, and Flash and Arrow are back this week, too.
No, Flash is next week.
Are you sure?
Yeah, Flash is next week. Arrow,
Arrow is definitely this week. Yeah, okay. Are you sure Flash isn't this week,
I'm
too,
pretty
though?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Huh. I could have sworn it was. Okay, all right.
Well, either way, some stuff's coming back. I'm most excited for Gotham and Black Lightning.
I agree with you on Gotham. I'm most excited for Gotham and Arrow, personally, me.
Yeah, okay, I forgot to throw in Arrow, but I've been loving everything about Black Lightning so far, so... I'm glad that the break wasn't too long.
Yeah, that was just a 1 week break, so that wasn't too bad at all.
Right. So I just noticed something, Jordan.
Yeah, what's up?
Today is episode 25 of this year podcast. And that's a no, pretty...
Hey, don't try to fool the listeners. I told you that. Did you tell them?
Well, okay. See, whenever Jordan talks, like I said, my go-to strategy is to Google pictures of Margot Robbie. So I wasn't paying attention, but
oh my goodness,
it's kind of a big note to make note of. Today we're going to do a State of the Union DC Films address kind of thing. We've brought on a guest to do that with us. He's not here yet. So while we do that, we're going to run down we're going to do a review of a Batman the Animated Series episode, and we're going to run down some non-movie related news for now. So let's get to the review. What's the next episode in our queue?
Hey, well, this is your favorite episode, isn't it, Adam?
Not at all. Not at all.
This episode is The Underdwellers. And do you want me to get our IMDb description? I got it pulled up right here.
One sentence. Yeah, go ahead.
You're absolutely right. One sentence. Batman discovers a subterranean colony of children in the sewer system dominated by the insane Sewer King, directed by Frank Parr, written by Tom Ruegger for the story credit, and then teleplay by Jules Dennis and Richard Mueller. And yes, this is a interesting
even you who loves everything or just about everything have to admit that this was a lesser light of an episode.
Why do I have that reputation even after our Lego Batman review?
That's why I said mostly everything.
Adam, I like this episode.
Of course,
quite
you
a
do.
Bit. I mean, let's just get started, man. I think the Sewer King is so creepy and so. He's just got. What's his name? The guy who voices him, Michael Pataki. And he just brings so much energy and so much. He's like really creepy in the role. And there's something like, yeah, it's weird, and it's just sort of reminds me a little bit of Danny DeVito's Penguin and how just weird and creepy it is. And I love it actually.
It's weird. I here's what I'll say. My thoughts on this are very brief. He's an oddball. He's weird. The villain. I thought it was a. My thing is that the episode feels like a filler episode. It feels like a one-off, a throwaway.
Well, there's no such thing as a filler episode on Batman the Animated Series. It's not a serialized show.
I get it, but for the most part, to me, the fact that it's not using a main comic villain, makes it feel like a filler, if that makes sense.
Well, I mean, Harley Quinn wasn't a comic villain, and
no, but she was tied to the Joker, so that
she had her own episodes, though.
Okay, fair enough.
I can think of
but,
at least.
But one. I like the Harley Quinn character. I don't like this guy. That's what it boils down to.
Come on, he's got so much personality, Adam.
It's over the top. It's ridiculous.
and he's creepy.
And it doesn't work here because this version of Batman is serious, and I don't think that over the top ridiculousness that we see here works.
I don't know, dude. I find him so creepy. Like when he's yelling at the kids and stuff, and he's like, yeah. I mean, it's menacing.
There are moments, but on the whole, I really don't care for it.
Okay, all right.
But I will say, the idea of Batman finding, you know, basically, we're dealing with a show that's, it's a metaphor for child labor kind of thing, right? Because he's
yes, right? Yeah,
and so Batman having to rescue kids, I think is the part of the episode I like, because it all goes back to the reason Batman does what he does is to prevent a trauma like what happened to him happening to other kids. And
exactly. And you can see how disgusted he is by the sewer king in this episode at the end of the episode, when I mean, because for that very reason, when he's like, when he's talking about he's very tempted to break his rule because of just how disgusted he is by what the sewer king's done to these kids.
Right. And while you know, none of these kids, excuse me, saw their parents killed in front of them. Mm-hmm. There is,
well, we don't know that.
But from what we saw.
Yeah.
But there is an element of them being ripped away from their parents because they're being kidnapped.
Yeah.
And so
a lot of them are presumably orphans.
Right. And so in that case, there is that similarity to Bruce Wayne, which makes his reasoning for taking such a hard stance with Dur King makes sense.
Yes.
And so,
yeah, it's a very personal, like, that's what I love about it. It's a very personal mission for Batman. He has a very, there's a real connection there with him, with these kids that he's saving, and especially the one kid that he takes in. And I love that part of this episode, Alfred with this kid who just, like, the scene where Alfred is trying to get him to wake up and he keeps pulling the covers back over his head. I found that hilarious.
So,
and him, what's that?
Yeah, so go ahead and continue.
Oh, and just that kid running all over Wayne Manor and stuff. It was really funny to see. And Bruce is like watching him and he's like, I wonder if I was ever that hard to deal with. And it's like, yeah, I kind of bet he was, knowing how stubborn he is. And like, if you think back to like when he was really young on Gotham, like in season one of Gotham, and the way how much trouble he gave Alfred there. And it's like, yeah, he probably was that much trouble as a kid for Alfred. So it was pretty funny to see Alfred having to deal with that.
Yeah, and that's what I got to say. In no matter what, even in the episodes that I'm less fond of,
mm-hmm.
The humor that Alfred provides always gives me something to enjoy from these episodes, even the ones that I'm not too fond of.
Oh, sure. And Ephraim Zimbalist Jr.'s delivery is just great, isn't it?
Right, yeah. So there are elements of the episode that I enjoy, but on the whole, it's not my cup of tea.
Okay, all right, I got you. So, I don't know, man. There's something about this episode that I just really enjoy. Like, oh, and then the other thing with Alfred, like when he's washing the dishes with the kid, and the kid's like putting all the dishes in his shirt to try and steal them.
Right. Yeah, that was funny.
But that was funny.
What would have made this episode better for me?
What's that?
Because you know how it's a sewer king, and they're in the sewer.
Yeah.
If the Ninja Turtles made a cameo, then I would have been I would have been all over it, because.
Oh, dude! There was a rumor a little while ago that they were going to do a Batman TMNT animated movie.
Well,
because
the comics have
been so popular.
It still might come to pass because we don't know what they have. I mean, we know what they've announced, but we don't know what's in the pipeline.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, we usually only know about, in terms of the DCU AOM line, anyway, we only usually know about three in advance.
Right.
So,
and with, like you said, with the popularity of the first crossover, and now the second one is in the midst of going on.
Right? Well, it's the third one now, technically.
Well, yeah, if you count the animated universe ones.
Yeah.
But I'm just counting the two in continuity sort of ones.
Yeah, okay.
So by that logic, the studio would be crazy not to investigate. You're appealing to two fandoms that way instead of just one.
I know our buddy Tim would be just thrilled if they did that.
He's really
and we've got the Ninja Turtles in Injustice 2 now, and he's really psyched about that. Yeah,
and we did talk about, you know, privately about reviewing definitely the first crossover, mm-hmm. And bringing Tim on. So
yes,
we'll definitely do that down the line.
Tim, if you're listening, I know we haven't asked you about that yet, but we were talking about that you'd be great to
Tim, you're coming on, and if Jordan doesn't read it by a certain period, it'll just be me and you.
Hey, I've read the first one.
Adam. Oh, you've actually read some comics other than Smallville season 11. That's good. Good to know.
Hey, are you serious, Adam? Are you serious, Adam? You know damn well.
Don't derail the episode. We got a guest coming. You're going to derail the episode. Just take what I say as fact.
Hey, I've got to defend myself.
Take what I say as fact and move on. If you do that, this podcast,
you know damn well Tom King's Batman run is like my favorite thing ever.
if you take what I say and move on to heart and continue with that rule, this podcast would move along so much smoother. It'd be great. So just keep that in mind. Tim, you're coming on.
I'll consider keeping that in mind.
Is there anything more that you want to specify of the episode?
Oh, yeah. One thing that I wanted to mention was the Batmobile's camouflage when Batman goes to it, and it's like camouflage like a garbage bin or whatever. You remember that?
Yes.
Yeah, that little scene I thought was just awesome. The way it unfolds, reminded me of like the armor on the Burton Batmobile, how it would, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that was so cool to me. And I really like this episode. And yeah, I mean, again, the main thing for me is just seeing Batman rescue these orphans or presumably orphans, or these street kids though, and these kids that have been taken away from their families at the very least. And you know, there's something really emotionally powerful about that to me, certainly. And then of course, again, this villain is just so charismatic, and I dig the Sewer King. I find him really creepy, and I think he's an awesome original creation for the series. So I dug him.
Right, and here's the thing. I mean, even though it's not one of my favorites by any means, it's not unwatchable. So it's got that going for it, and like you said, it does have the personal connection to, you know, with Bruce rescuing the kids and all that. So.
Yeah.
For that reason, I'll go ahead and rate it because I have nothing more to say on the episode. I'll give it a C+.
Okay. All right. And I think I'm going to give this one an A- actually. So.
All right. We're far apart.
We're pretty far apart on this one, actually.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, nothing surprises me anymore.
next up is POV.
Yes, but we're not doing that this week. So. If you haven't watched it, you got some time to watch it.
Yes.
If you're following along.
I just wanted to give everybody a heads up. I don't know that that's going to be on the next episode that comes out, but just that'll be the next one.
Yeah. Cover, so watch it and bank it in your memory banks, and then when we do it, you'll be up on where we are. So.
Yes, indeed.
There is some news, and we're delaying the movie news for our guest.
Yes, and we're delaying one piece of TV news for our guest as well too. So.
Yeah. Let's talk about the TV stuff.
Yes. So We've got three pieces of TV news first to cover. First up, we've got, these are two pieces of news items, but they're both related, is that we've got two more pieces of Doom Patrol casting for Titans. Of course, what was it? Was it last episode that we talked about the Chief being cast, I believe?
We did.
And now this episode, first up, we've got Elastigirl, Rita Farr, being cast, and she will be played by April Bowlby on Titans, who, this is at least where I know her from, is Two and a Half Men. She played Candy on that show, and I'm a big fan of that show.
Alan's ditzy wife.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, she was, I mean, I remember her from that, and I'll say this, and I'm sorry, but I have to say it. She was hot, so.
Right. I really liked her on that show, and like I said, I'm a big fan of Two and a Half Men, and to see her get cast here, I'm like, yeah, I really liked her
in all fairness, I haven't seen her in anything beyond that, so.
Yeah, I don't think I have either. That's the immediate thing that came to me, and I think sure. I looked through Wikipedia or IMDb, and I didn't recognize anything else. But the big thing to note here, Adam, is that it does look like we're going to get they're going with the original roster of the Doom Patrol, right. Which is similar to the one that I'm most familiar with. They changed it. The place where I'm most familiar with the Doom Patrol, Adam, is from the 2003 animated series, Teen Titans animated series.
Yeah, the good one, as I call it.
I'll call it the much better one. I won't say that it's the only good one, but I'll say it's the better one.
To me, there's two scales. There's the great one, which is Young Justice. And there's the good one, which is Teen Titans.
And then
there's the horse crap, which is Teen Titans Go.
Well, I'll go a little bit further than that. I think that both Young Justice and Teen Titans are great. I think that both those series are great.
My whole point of this, the distinction, was so I can reaffirm the level of crap that is Teen Titans Go.
Well, that one's the one that I consider just okay personally, but. We're on different opinions.
On different planets. Where that
we are on that.
I'm on Mars with John Jones, and you're on Krypton with the dead people.
What I was trying to say was that the roster on that show was very similar to the original Doom Patrol roster, except that they had Mento instead of the Chief on the 2003 animated series.
Sure.
So, but of course we know the Chief's going to be on Titans because he's who we talked about getting cast last week. We don't know if Mento is going to be on Titans yet. But anything else you wanted to say about April Balbi being cast as Elastigirl?
Basically, just what I said about the last piece of casting is, you know, I have limited experience with this actress. And I liked her with what she was getting. I'm glad to know she can do comedy, because if you can do comedy, you can transition to other genres well.
Yes. Best example of that, Michael Rosenbaum. He was a comedic actor, and then look at the amazing dramatic performance he gave as one of the best live-action villains ever as Lex Luthor. Right. Had to get my Smallville reference in, sorry.
I agree with that one, so it's allowed.
Thank you.
See, when I agree with it, it's allowed. When I don't agree with it, I just, like I said, I tune it out. But I trust the casting people.
Me too. I mean they've done a great job casting on both TV and movies. I feel like DC has a great track record, so I totally trust them.
So who's the next piece of casting we heard for this?
So more Doom Patrol casting, which is that Jake Michaels has been cast as Cliff Steele, a.k.a. Robot Man, in the Doom Patrol on Titans. Yeah. And he'll guest star on one episode of the series with potential to recur. It's an exclusive from comicbook.com.
Now, are they all one episode and then possibility to recur? Is that...
Let me see what they said about... That's what it said about April Balbi too. She'll first pop up on episode 5 titled The Doom Patrol with the potential to recur later in the season.
Okay, cool.
So this guy was not on Two and a Half Men. I have never seen this actor before. But again, I trust the casting, so that's cool.
It's going to come down to this for me. I have to go back on Comixology and see if I can pick up some original Doom Patrol, just to familiarize myself a little bit more than the Teen Titans series.
Is that your primary experience?
Oh yeah, that's the only reason place I saw him.
So
I definitely want to go to Comixology and pick up some of those older issues to sort of just get a sense of what we're dealing with here.
A comic book that I would recommend to you for the Doom Patrol is there's an issue of the Batman the Brave and the Bold tie-in comic book series that had The Brave and the Bold in it. And anyway, I would recommend
Batman, The Brave and the Bold, the show that you don't like? You really are an odd bird, man. I gotta tell you that.
Yeah. Well, I recommend it.
You're so odd that if you had black spew coming out of your mouth, you'd be the penguin. So go ahead, but continue.
Anyway, there's an.
What was that issue number?
I don't remember what issue number it is. I could pull it.
Now you're gonna send me on a wild goose. It's okay. I'll go look.
I could pull it off my bookshelf, but
don't worry about that. I'll go search it. Give me an excuse to buy more digital books.
But anyway, I think that's my only comic. But the reason I recommended it is you're right. I'm not a big fan of Brave and the Bold, but it is the only comic book with the Doom Patrol that I've ever read. So I thought I would.
Basically, ladies and gentlemen, what we've discovered is that Jordan reads slightly more comics than Rick Shue of Batman on Film. So there's that. But Rick Shue is reading a much better comic than anything Jordan's read, which is Batman White Knight.
No, that is not. There is no way. I have not read that yet, but there is no way that is better than Tom King's Batman run. No way, period.
Well, we're not going to go through this again. No. That's our thought on the news.
Hey, you just said that. You just acknowledged two episodes ago that Batman Annual number 2 was your favorite comic book of 2017.
I don't disagree with that.
Did Batman White Knight start in 2017? I think it did.
Yeah, but I'm saying I got to see on the whole. But I'm just talking more about the small fall season 11 comics. I just like the grinding your gears, but the fact is...
Well, at least we agree that Batman Annual number 2 was the best comic of 2017.
You read slightly more comics than Rick Shue. That was the point I was trying to make. But why do I have a feeling that he is eventually going to catch up to you? you're both going at a snail's pace, but we'll see who comes out on top.
Hey, well, here's the thing. I'm always caught up on my comics because I only read like 2 monthly titles.
Which is
Batman and Justice League. So.
Yeah, there's that.
And then I read some of the digital first ones too. I read Injustice 2, and I read the new. I don't know if you've been reading this, but the Telltale tie-in series that takes place in between the first two seasons of the Telltale video game.
I have not just yet, but I'm going to start. So.
Oh, it's quite good. It's quite good.
Don't spoil anything.
Okay, no spoilers, no spoilers, but it is quite good.
But what beyond the Doom Patrol and the Titans, what else we got?
Yes. Well, this one I actually forgot to pull up, so I'm pulling it up now. But it is, I mean, the primary thing is that it's a picture, but we've also got an episode synopsis that I'll talk about, which is that we've got a picture of Iris West Allen suiting up as, well, we don't know if she's going to have a name yet, but...
The Flash! Because everybody knows she's the Flash.
Damn it, Adam. Anyway, okay, here, I've got it pulled up now. We've got her suited up in a superhero suit. It's like this blue and silver. To me, it looks really cool. I dig the suit. She's got a domino mask, and it's like a blue and silver sort of leather jacket thing. So I dig that. But here's the episode synopsis for the episode of The Flash airing on March 13th, 2018, episode 16 of season 4. Directed by Harry Giergen, I'm probably botching that name, and written by Eric Wallace, Iris suits up. Team Flash confronts a new bus meta, Matthew, a.k.a. Melting Pot, guest star Leonardo Nam, with the ability to swap people's DNA. During a battle with Team Flash, Matthew transfers Barry's Grant Gustin super speed to Iris, Candace Patton. Now, with a new threat unleashed on Central City, Barry must act as the team leader while Iris takes on the mantle of superhero speedster in order to defeat their new foe.
All right. Well, Jordan said he likes the costume. Folks, everybody knows what I think of The Flash this season. Everybody knows what I think of Iris West this season. And everybody knows what I think about the idea of giving her superpowers, even if for one episode. It all amounts to a big steaming pile of crap. The suit looks third rate. It looks like some cheap cosplay from Walmart. Look, if you've watched any other DC TV, you've seen this before. And you've seen it done much better on Smallville. Because I don't care about the way Iris is being written, because I think this looks like crap, and because I think Smallville did it better, on March 13th, I will not be watching this garbage episode of The Flash. And so that's all I got to say about that.
Okay, well, obviously we are on very different pages with this. I think it's a really cool idea because I loved how well Smallville did it. The thing that came to mind for me first on Smallville is the episode Wrath in season 7, where Clark's powers are transferred to Lana. And this, if you follow me on social media, I do my Smallville Saturday posts.
And folks, most people, let me tell you, if you follow Jordan on social media and you don't have him muted, you're one of a few. So, congratulations.
Yeah, I learned that a few days ago, didn't I?
Yeah.
Anyway, because of this news, I thought for my most recent Smallville Saturday, at least my most recent one as of our recording this, I decided to talk about the Smallville episode Wrath, because that's the episode where Clark's powers get transferred to Lana. And Clark, in that case, unlike in this episode of The Flash, Clark retains his powers too, but Lana gets powers, and I love that episode. There's another episode that Craig Byrne from Krypton site, he said that this is the one it reminded of him of more, and I totally see where he's coming from. It's just the episode Leech in season 1, where Clark's powers get transferred to Eric Summers, and Clark actually loses his powers. But so that's in terms of the way the power transfer works, I think that's more similar. But in terms of it being the hero's significant other that gets the powers, it's more similar to Wrath, in my opinion. Anyway, this does seem to be – I don't know if this was intentional, but I'd like to think it is. It does seem to be taking inspiration from two amazing Smallville episodes. So that, I think, is really cool. And so I think it's a cool concept. And I think that, like I said, I think the suit looks cool. I think for a one-episode thing, shoot, I'm down for this. This sounds like it could be a lot of fun. So I'm looking forward to March 13th seeing this episode.
Well, I hope you enjoy it, because I'll enjoy not watching it.
Well, thank you, I suppose.
That's all we have for non-movie news. We're going to take we're not going to take a break. We are going to take a break, but you won't hear our break because we don't record that. And then the next time you hear us, we'll have our guest with us.
So, yes, indeed.
Hang on to your hats, your scarves, your action figures, whatever you're holding on to, hang on to it. We'll be right back shortly.
Back in a flash.
And not Iris Flash either.
I figured it was apt since we were just talking about the Flash.
Welcome back, everybody. And as promised, we are going to do our State of the DC Films Union address kind of thing for our 25th episode. To do that, we brought in what I consider a expert what's the terminology I'm looking for? The scooping game, if you will. And our guest is Mario Francisco Robles from Revenge of the Fans and El Fanboy. Mario, how are you?
I'm doing all right. And you got my name right, so that gets me excited. Well, Robles, you said it correctly.
Well, you know what it is? It's because I'm of Italian descent. So the Latin style names and stuff like that, I can do pretty good. Now, if it was Russian, I would have butchered it, or German or something like that. But
yeah, and yours is Basciano, right?
Yes,
am I saying that right?
Yes, yeah. You know how
very exact.
You know how badly it's been butchered in my school days. it's not even funny. And I would not. The funny thing is, I wouldn't answer. The teacher would stare at me for it's strange. I'm like, well, you didn't call my name right. I'm not going to answer you.
Yeah. Well, I've gotten a bunch too. I've gotten Robles, Robles, Rubbles. And what makes Rubbles really troubling is the fact that my father was once trying to get me named Barney before my mom told him no. I was very close to being Barney Rubble, so that would have been horrendous. Yeah.
Mind you, it's a famous character, so there's that.
There is that. That is true. You know, I guess, you know, that there is a silver
lining. Exactly. But listen, not to get off topic too much, but my parents left the naming of my first name to my brother and sister, and my sister wanted to name me Rice Krispie. So thankfully, that didn't go through. Yeah.
You could have been like a rapper with that name. But anyway.
can you imagine the byline on my articles, Rice Krispie? That would have been good. Oh,
you know what? Just goodness. For that, I think I'm going to go on the back end of the site and change your name to Rice Krispie.
I'm down for it. Let's do it. Why not?
All right, let's talk some DC, right?
Yes, let's talk some DC.
All right.
One of the bits of news that we have is that the DC Films division, Walter Hamada, has started doing his job in earnest, and he has hired a VP of production for the DC films. Mm-hmm. And as far as I know, her name is Chantal Nong. Is that how, I'm assuming that's how it's pronounced?
Yes, seems about right.
Well, hey, well, you're on the roll. You're on a roll with the names tonight.
I know. Adam. I should play the lottery and see what happens. But but she's worked on the short list of filmography I saw. I think it was the Hollywood Reporter that initially broke the story. Said something about she worked on 300 Rise of an Empire, and she also worked on the Godzilla 2014,
Gareth Edwards, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, and I think on the upcoming Jason Statham film, The Meg?
Yes, yeah. You're right about that, I think, yeah. So now, this ties into, I think this piece of news ties into one of our listener questions, Mario, that we have for you.
And bring it on.
Do you believe that WB has learned from the experience of the last five films, and is it in a better place, or do you believe the next few movies will be just as divisive as the previous ones? And he says, for the record, I greatly enjoyed all of the films so far. And that question is from Chad Schaefer.
Well, Chad, thanks for sending that in. Yes, I do really feel that they've learned their lessons. I for one, have a particularly optimistic outlook on DC's future. As you could tell, you know, there's some new powers to be. There's some new blood coming in. They're cleaning house a little bit. They're kind of changing the philosophy there a little bit. As they said last fall, they're starting to try to go back to a filmmaker-driven focus for the studio. Less of that, you know, the committee is breathing down your neck trying to get you to make your movie a particular way. Sure. They're going back to the way Warner Brothers used to be, which is, here, we trust you. Here's what you need. Go make an awesome movie. We're going to leave you alone. And that's seems to be the direction they're heading back. And I have my concerns with that, but for the most part, I think they're on the right track and they're looking to not repeat the mistakes of the past.
So, Mary, just for clarification, because some of our listeners may not know, what would exactly be Chantel's job as a VP of production? Like, what is that? Do you have any idea of what that would entail, like a general idea?
Yeah, I mean, production tells me that she's probably, you know, she's working on logistics. She's working on deciding which projects get onto the slate, like, you know, and in what order are they produced, coming up with like the timelines for the production, sort of slotting the actual, you know, the actual roadmap for all these different films that they have coming up these next few years.
Okay.
So the actual production end of things.
So budget and stuff would be all part
of
that.
Okay. Things like that.
One of the things they do need to get under control, I think, is the budget. So hopefully she has a good head on her shoulders.
Well, yeah, and that's an area where I think Walter Hamada is going to be a big deal because, you know, he comes primarily from a horror background.
Sure.
And if you look at some of his films, you know, like he's been attached to like the Conjuring movies and Annabelle and whatnot, and those all have very low budgets with huge profits. And that's kind of the key with horror movies. You know, they sell a very simple, easy to grasp concept that makes you want to go see it. And even though it may cost $10 million, it might do, you know, $250 million.
Sure.
Because just, you know, they know how to get a lot out of a little. They know how to sort of make the story focused enough that it sells itself without needing too many bells and whistles.
Well, here's an example that I always tell Jordan, and Jordan served me when we reported the whole idea that Michael Bay would be interested in doing a Lobo,
mm-hmm.
that kind of film, and I said to myself, well, the reason, you know, why he hasn't signed on to anything yet is because he wants to get the budget down. Him and the studio are both on the same page with that. Now, to me, when Michael Bay is telling you that your budget is too high,
yeah,
your budget is too damn high. Like, it's just that simple.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think, and I'll get your thoughts in a second, Jordan, but to mm-hmm. me, it does seem like it's a more centralized structure that Walter Hamada is laying on, as opposed to what you said, Mario, which is the, you know, before it was Zack Snyder, it was Deborah Snyder, and it was, I think, Charles Roven, that were the three architects. But now they seem to be focusing a little bit more, like having point men and point women to.
Yeah, they're trying to streamline things a little bit.
Right.
Yeah.
Jordan, quickly, what are your thoughts do you think this is a good idea, this hire, this Chantal? What are your feelings on it? Are you excited? You?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I don't have that much commentary on her specifically, but just I'm optimistic about just like Mario. I'm optimistic about DC's future going forward, and I think that I'm very excited about Walter Hamada for very much the same reason as Mario said, which is that he's got experience churning out huge profits from low budget films, and that's something DC really needs right now in the wake of the $300 million Justice League film. Mm-hmm. I'm all for DC's direction going forward. I think that focusing more on standalone films, which is what it sounds like they're doing, I think that's a good approach. And I think that hopefully they're giving their filmmakers a lot of creative control. It looks like that's the case with James Wan. I'm excited to see what's in store going forward. Absolutely. And I'll echo Chad's thoughts in that I've personally enjoyed what they've done up to this point in the DCEU. But I'm very excited for the future.
Now, since you mentioned the two words that everybody's, you know, sort of kind of iffy on, Justice League, Chad Schaefer brought in another question for us. And he says, what is the likelihood of an extended cut of Justice League? Not a Snyder cut, just a longer version of the theatrical cut. Mario, what's your take on that?
Well, I mean, I was told about a couple of months ago that Justice League was indeed kicking around an extended version of the theatrical cut. It's one of those things where I think they're going to see how the home release goes, how the sales go, and figure out if they need to release that. You know, there's different schools of thought on it. Some say that if it sells really high, they may add that in there just to kind of keep the momentum going. I think it makes more sense if sales are stagnating a little bit and people aren't just pulling it off the shelves. They might release that as a special incentive to get people to buy the film. All I know is, you know, they have more than enough footage to do so, and that, you know, they were indeed thinking of doing something. Essentially, they were mapping out what would be an extended cut that would be included in a Superman trilogy set that would be Man of Steel, BVS, and Justice League. And I think you could also, you know, you could also purchase it separately. But when I spoke to someone close to the situation, they were saying that that they are indeed, you know, kicking around the idea of an extended cut because they have all this extra footage. And, you know, it would be an extension of the theatrical cut. It wouldn't be like the vaunted Zack Snyder cut, but it would just be in general, just, you know, whatever additional material they think would help round out the film and beef up the running time a little bit. You know, they've got access to it and they will release it if they think the sales need a kick in the arm.
My hope is that they do release it separately because I already have Man of Steel and BVS. Mm. I don't have to double dip on purpose. So,
yeah.
So do me that favor, Warner Brothers. I've supported you up until now. Throw a guy a bone. Jordan, would you watch an extended cut of the theatrical version of Justice League?
Oh, hell yeah, I'd watch it. But, I mean, that it seems odd to me that they do it at this point just because why would they release two bonus scenes separately and not re-insert them into the film?
I think probably that's why for the – because there's so much more, they could probably throw that all into one.
Okay, one I mean, okay. Yeah, it just strikes me as odd that they wouldn't do it with the initial home release. But, I mean, I'd certainly watch it, and I think that would be awesome. And if we get more, if we get those two scenes integrated in the movie, that would be awesome. Because, I mean, perhaps my biggest issue with the entire movie, Justice League, and I've said this before, is the lack of the Man of Steel music. And we heard that. We heard twice as much of that in those two scenes than we did in the entire running time of the theatrical cut of Justice League. Mm-hmm. So if we get those scenes reintegrated, and if we get any more scenes with that Man of Steel music, shoot, I'll be thrilled. So I'd love to see a little bit more.
Yeah, what I think would be a pretty good strategy to release like a special collector's edition, you know, kind of like as part of like a second or third wave of home releases. I think it would be good to kind of save it for around the time Aquaman's coming out, for like around November leading into December, that holiday season. I think it would be kind of smart to release like a special collector's ultimate edition of Justice League for people to, you know, buy people as a stocking stuffer for the holidays as they're getting hyped up for Aquaman.
That's a
good idea.
That's a great idea. I mean, Warner Brothers should hire you for these ideas because clearly sometimes on some cases their marketing department could use some help.
You're excited about Aquaman. Go rewatch his previous appearance in Justice League. So
yeah, So I have a feeling that that would be a very smart way to do it and to maximize the home video sales, because they really are paying a ton of attention to those. You don't even know, because the home release stuff is going to be the difference between whether or not the film breaks even or not. So they're keeping a very close eye on those sales, and that's why I think they're hanging on to that extended cut as like an ace up their sleeve if they need a little extra just to get them over the finish line.
So now we're talking about Aquaman. We just mentioned it's coming in December. Mm-hmm. Now, on Revenge of the Fans, you had a scoop as to when we might possibly see the first trailer.
Yes. So,
what's the situation on all that, Mario?
Well, I'm told that at WonderCon during the DC panel, they are going to unveil the first look trailer at Aquaman. Now, whether or not that means they're going to release that same one online, you know, sometimes at these Comic Cons type situations, they do a thing where they show the fans in attendance like a really beefed up crazy sizzle reel, and then we get like a version of it that's a little more, you know, simplified. So I don't know if they're going to do something like that or if we're going to get to see the same trailer, but it looks like they will be releasing it because the following week Ready Player One, which is a Warner Brothers production, comes out. So Aquaman will be bundled in with that as well. So if you go see that in theaters, you'll see it, but there'll also be the online version. The only part, like I said, that's unclear is if we're going to see the same thing that they see at WonderCon. I don't know about that, but we're going to get an Aquaman trailer around WonderCon.
And I'm just from the bits that we've heard and what we've, you know, James Wan throughout the production and the fact that it was really a quiet production. I'm so excited for Aquaman. I think it's going to be one of those steps that turns DC's fortunes around here. I think.
Have you guys been looking at those early reactions?
Yeah, the test results are apparently, you know, the test screenings are going exceedingly well. So, yeah, so that bodes well.
Yeah, very well.
Now, granted, they went well for all of the previous DCU films too. Now, I agree with those assessments because I like those films, but those films wound up being way more divisive than you'd imagine they would be following those initial test screenings. So,
but also remember, let's not forget that those films, while some of the criticism is definitely valid, those films had one hindrance that amongst you know critics and certain members of the fan base that this one won't, at least not in a direct capacity as it was with the other three films, and that's the name Zack Snyder. I think there's a
There aren't really any polarizing elements with Aquaman. You know, people like the character. People like Jason Momoa's take on him. People like James Wan. There's really nothing sort of polarizing or divisive about it. So that's definitely working in its favor.
Speaking of, I will say, Adam, Zack Snyder's name wasn't directing directing Suicide Squad. And that still wound up getting a similar reception
Nobody saw his name, though. I mean, the thing is, the less you see of his name for general audiences, and the best. The thing is the visual style. As long as it's different than what we saw from Zack Snyder, I think that's going to go a long way. Because all it takes for the general audience perspective is, in my opinion, I could be wrong. Tell me if I'm wrong, Mario. All it takes from the general audience is one good trailer, and they'll start getting back on board.
I mean, the marketing is key on these kinds of things. Yep.
And if I was them, I'd put from the studio that brought you the Dark Knight trilogy and from the director of the Conjuring films. That's what I'd put on the poster. But again, nobody pays me for these ideas.
Wonder Woman too. I mean, they could say that. Now
that's right. Studio. Yeah, Wonder. I would plaster that all over the place.
All over the place.
I'd put her on the poster just because.
Yep.
I will say I think. Personally, I think it's a good chance we do get what they show everybody at WonderCon, because they already did their thing where they sort of at Comic-Con when they showed everybody at Comic-Con a little teaser of Aquaman, and then we didn't see anything. And so I could see them giving us that was their treat for the fans who were just in attendance, and then this time they're going to give everybody.
I hope so. And I have a feeling Ready Player One is going to be a pretty big movie for the studio. So that's a lot of eyeballs, a lot of people who are going to show up to see the latest Steven Spielberg opus. And if you want to get those same people excited for Aquaman, so it would be really good if they really put their best foot forward with this first trailer.
This character is not on the list of questions, shockingly to me. So I'll bring it up. Everybody knows that there's the Batman that's in development. Mario, what is going like? what's the situation with Matt Reeves, the Batman? Where are we? Because Jordan has been, he will get into, I don't want to say arguments is the wrong word, discussions about the Batman film.
And Jordan
has been using your one of your previous reports that said it would be connected to the shared universe and that it would likely star
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Jake Gyllenhaal. But also, what's his name? J.K. Simmons and
Jeremy Irons.
That's it, as Alfred.
Lots of J's. Yeah.
It's very confusing. But so Jordan is convinced that it's going to be part of the shared universe. That those two are going to appear. Now, there are others speculating online. There are friends at Batman on Film that Matt Reeves is going to do his own separate thing outside of, you know, the DC Films continuity. So where are we? What's the situation with that? Like,
Well, what I've reported in the past, which I'm still standing by, is that Matt Reeves is planning on having this be part of the shared universe. But, you know, it's one of these things where the storyline is going to basically be able to stand on its own, where the film, you know, it's not going to rely at all on anything that's come before. But by the mere fact that we're going to have J.K. Simmons and Jeremy Irons in there, you know, it's going to be understood this is the same Batman. Essentially, it's going to be like what happened in the 90s, where when they recast Michael Keaton and suddenly it was Val Kilmer and then it was George Clooney, we were all meant to understand that this is the same Batman. You know, even in, was it Batman and Robin, or someone mentioned Vicki Vale's character from the first movie? Like, it was all canon, but it just, they swapped the actors and they kind of took it in a different direction. They almost kind of soft rebooted it while keeping the canon the same. So they kind of seem to be going back to that idea where, yes, it's part of the same shared world, but, you know, Matt Reeves is being given the creative freedom to kind of take the, you know, take the character in whatever direction he sees fit. Now, what I could see becoming a problem, and this is what I alluded to earlier, the whole idea of the filmmaker-driven approach versus the shared universe sort of producer-driven approach where everything kind of has to connect, is I could see Matt Reeves, you know, having issues if suddenly Geoff Johns is like, cool, we love all this creative freedom you've got, we love your ideas, but can you please just try to plant a seed for this thing? Or can you please not kill off this character because we want to use him for that? Like, I could see Matt Reeves suddenly going, well, maybe I don't want to be part of this anymore. You know what I mean? So it's one of these things where, as far as, you know, as far as everything I've been told, all of the latest, you know, whispers and murmurs about him leaving are unfounded. He's still very much attached to this. He's dedicated to this. But, you know, it's a slightly tenuous situation. I could see it becoming an issue where they've given him all this freedom, but they also want to have their cake and eat it too and keep the shared world going. So that's something I'm going to be keeping a very close eye on.
Well, from my point of view, and Jordan, we'll get your thoughts on it in a second. I love the idea of the shared universe. I really do. But for the sake of keeping such a fantastic filmmaker happy in Matt Reeves, because I think he's perfect for the character, like he's a perfect fit. Mm-hmm. And I the thought of seeing a trilogy by Matt Reeves, a potential trilogy, excites me beyond no end. So to me, keep your shared universe, but just keep it out of Matt Reeves' film. Like, can't you put those connections in other places? Like, couldn't they theoretically just let him, like, you've got the same Alfred, you've got the same Gordon, so there's that. The audience can cling on to that. And just leave all this extra side stuff out of Matt Reeves' Batman film just to keep everything copacetic with him. Like, I mean, would that be so hard? Like, come on.
Yeah, I don't think that. I think that's what they're planning on doing. What I brought up was more so just like hypotheticals. Okay, you know, like it's the whole idea of like, you know, they are trying to have their cake and eat it too. Because they're going filmmaker driven, then, you know, for all intents and purposes, they should cancel the shared concept because you can't really be 100% film, you know, filmmaker driven if you still have other films kind of working around this one that they all kind of have to work together. You know, it's tough to do both.
Sure.
You know?
So Jordan, are you happy now that you, as of right now, it's everything is still, you know, Matt Reeves' Batman is still part of the canon. And
yeah, I mean, absolutely. This is what I've been saying for the longest time. And like, yeah, I have been referencing Mario's article about that. I even screenshotted the part about that, and I've been referencing that to people. But yeah, I just think it would be such a such a shame to if they didn't do that, if they didn't continue on with this version of Batman that's been set up, because I think that they've established so much great things with him, and I think that it would really be a missed opportunity not to continue with that. And for me, I don't think walking this line of allowing filmmakers to do what they want to do but still maintaining a shared universe, I don't think it's as difficult to walk that line as it's maybe perceived to be. And the reason for that is because look at the comics. Okay, look at how, I mean, pretty they give their writers a lot of freedom in the comics to do. Superman can be doing something in his title, and then over in the Justice League title, he can be doing something completely different. And it's like, even if the Superman title and the Justice League title come out on the same day, and Superman's in Kansas in one, and he's in space in the other, everybody just assumes that they're taking place at different times. Like, he did that last week and this week. So, like, even though they come out on the same day, you just assume they're taking places at slightly different times. Like, there's no issue there. So,
yeah, I mean, theoretically, the studio does have a blueprint of how to do it. It's called the comics.
Exactly.
It's just sometimes they get in their own way and certain things happen. And
yeah, so it's just, I'm saying it's not as complicated as I think it's perceived to be. I mean, there's already, like you said, there's already a blueprint for it. So
My ultimate takeaway from the whole Matt Reeves thing is you've had, like, he walked away from negotiation once to get the creative control. You gave it to him. Now just stay out of his way, because to me, if they like money, and we know they do, the best thing in terms to line their pockets and to get everybody on board were to have a new trilogy with another fantastic filmmaker. And if they do that, I think,
and that Matt Reeves is.
Exactly. So I think they're in good shape there. One of the questions we did get is from Lawrence Kaufman, and he says that he loves Spider-Man Homecoming and was wondering, Mario, if you think that Daly and Goldstein will have a hand in the Flashpoint script, or are they just being brought in as directors, and is there any whispers on when production might start on that?
Well, for starters, I would be shocked if they didn't have some sort of say on the script. You know, if you look at a lot of their projects, they're credited as writers. And I don't think they wrote Game Night, oddly enough. But I feel like they're going to have some sort of influence on there just based on their track record. So I do think that. Also, by the way, Lawrence Kaufman, I want to just give a shout out to him. Thanks for sending in the question. And Lawrence is one of my Patreon patrons, so he's the man as far as I'm concerned.
Awesome.
as for what was the rest of the question here?
He wants to know if you've heard anything about when production might start on that, or what the goal is for production.
I have not heard anything about that because it's still early stages. As came out late last week, and they have yet to even sign the deal. It's one of these things where they're still...
I wanted to ask you about that. Why is that?
Yeah, this is my speculation, but I think they're still trying to figure out what this movie is going to be. Is it going to be The Flash, or are they going to, you know, like, in other words, are they going to revert it back to it being The Flash, or are they going to stick with the Flashpoint idea? I think that's a very important factor here in hiring the directors and getting them to all be on the same page. Because some of what's come out lately, you know, the hashtag show had an exclusive about some of the villains that are supposedly going to appear in it, and none of these villains are ones from the Flashpoint comic books. These are more standalone Flash villains. So it's got some people thinking maybe they're going to revert it back to just be crossing into it, as opposed to a full-on Flashpoint that's going to involve Batman and Wonder Woman and be this whole huge crossover shared universe event film. So I have a feeling, you know, they're trying to figure that out first. You know, and if you ask me, you know, their forte, based on, like, Spider-Man Homecoming, they would probably be better off doing, like, a straight-up The Flash movie. Something that really gets to let Barry Allen shine, put the focus on him, his coming-of-age drama, establish his world. Because, you know, they wrote Spider-Man Homecoming, and I thought they did a great job with that. So, personally,
I agree.
I kind of hope that they do revert back to this just being The Flash. But, you know, so if I had to take a guess, the reason, you know, the holdup for now is that debate of whether or not to keep it Flashpoint or just let this be a Flash movie.
See, and for me, if it ends up being Flashpoint and there's, you know, Thomas Wayne Batman and Wonder Woman's in it and Aquaman's in it, and there's a cool segue for Affleck to either leave or not leave the role, whatever he's doing, then I'll be there, you know, opening weekend. Mm-hmm. But and if it's a Flash, just a straight up Flash movie, I'll be there too. I'm good either way. But I think, like you said, Mayor, given these directors what seem to be their strengths with Spider-Man Homecoming, and also, you know, just from what I've heard about Game Night, I think a straight up Flash movie for now would be the best way to go. And then you can always build up to Flashpoint later on in the game.
So, yeah.
So I'm with you on that one. Jordan, where do you stand on this, all this Flash versus Flashpoint? What's your take on all this?
Yeah, well, I'd honestly be good either way with Flash or Flashpoint. But if you are going to do Flashpoint, I actually think it makes a lot of sense to do it as sort of the first Flash movie. And here's why. And this is something I heard. I can't remember. I wish I could give credit. I can't remember who brought this up. But they made a really good point, which is that doing what Barry does in Flashpoint feels like a rookie mistake. It doesn't seem like something Barry would do after he's had a bunch of experiences with Flash. It seems like something that somebody would think about as soon as they got their powers, and as soon as they realized I can go back in time, they're like, okay, I'm going to save my mom. And so I think that it actually makes a lot of sense to do it as the initial Flash film, is to do Flashpoint. That being said, they don't do Flashpoint. I think that's okay too. I liked Spider-Man Homecoming. I didn't quite love Spider-Man Homecoming. But what I will say is that I actually think that Ezra Miller's Flash, who I love, his take on the Flash. I love what he did in Justice League. He has a lot of similar mannerisms to Tom Holland's Spider-Man. So I immediately see a connection there. Obviously, Spider-Man Homecoming is a lot more lighthearted a movie than what you'd expect a Flashpoint movie to be. So that leads me to believe that maybe Daly and Goldstein would be more suited to a standalone Flash movie that maybe is lighter in tone. But that being said, there's nothing that says that they couldn't tackle a darker movie. So I'd certainly have confidence in them if they try to do that. I'd give them the benefit of the doubt. So either way, I'm good, and I'm excited for whatever they come up with, and I'm excited to see it.
Two more thoughts related to this from me. First of all, I'll say that I thought Spider-Man Homecoming, that, you know, to me, having Michael Keaton as Vulture was great. Batman was in it, so I was there. and he's one of the best villains in the MCU for me, next to Killmonger and Loki. But
don't forget about Wilson Fisk.
Yeah, but Marvel can say it's all connected, but I don't count the Netflix shows. Part of the MCU. Jeff Loeb can tell me whatever he wants, but I don't buy it.
It's ridiculous. Adam, okay, hold on, because this relates to what we were just talking
about. Oh, here we go.
This relates to what we were just talking about. The MCU TV shows, those are an example of what the DCEU could do similarly with their movies, in that they're part of the universe, but they're only tangentially connected, in that they're technically set in the universe, okay, but they don't have to make reference. The MCU TV shows are a perfect example of doing that in live action.
Okay, that's a fair point. I won't argue that. Yeah, okay. I'll give you that. And the other thing,
thank you.
I don't give you much, but I'll give you that. The only other thing I'll say to Daly and Goldstein is that as long as they don't have Iris saying "We are the Flash," I'm good with whatever they decide to do.
Oh my goodness, Adam!
That line on the TV show is ridiculous. But moving on, I've argued about that many a time in ad nauseum.
Yeah, on this episode already.
Exactly. There's a Twitter question. There's two that pertain to Superman. So I'll do the one that doesn't pertain to Superman first, and then we'll do the Superman one. The Twitter user @SuperAqua86 wants.
I think this is Cedric Ramos.
Sure. Okay. Thanks for clarifying the actual name of the person. I just got his Twitter handle.
Yeah, sure. I just figured I'd make sure we shouted out
who he wants to know. He wants to know when we are going to start, or if we're going to start, seeing any updates on Green Lantern Corps.
See, I have a feeling that that is on the back burner, precisely for reasons that we discussed earlier on in this conversation, the budget. You know, in order to do a Green Lantern Corps movie and to do it right, you're going to need to throw a lot of money at this thing. You know, unless they were to like streamline it and just make it a Jon Stewart movie or just a Hal Jordan movie. But remember, the original concept here that they were working on was a Green Lantern Corps. And you can't do a whole cosmic, intergalactic cosmic movie on a low budget. You know what I mean?
Would you really need to spend any more than Guardians of the Galaxy did? I mean,
Well, what did they spend on those? I don't even know. I don't have those figures in front of me.
$170 for Guardians 1.
I mean, I guess, you know, we know Warner Brothers has a hard time keeping these budgets nailed down.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I get the sense. I haven't heard anything about it in a while. And every time I try to bug a source about it, that movie never comes up. So I have a feeling that whatever Goyer was working on either hasn't satisfied them, or for whatever reason, that film is just not a priority right now. You know, my hunch has been that it's the budget. But regardless of whether or not it is, all I know is every time I poke around like, hey, any updates on the slate, that movie is never mentioned. So I just kind of get the sense that for whatever reason, it's just not a priority at Warner Brothers right now.
My hope would be this, that once, you know, if all goes well and Walter Hamada and Chantal Nang are doing things, you know, getting things back on track, once we have, you know, a solid Aquaman film that starts turning people around, and if Shazam follows suit, and if Wonder Woman 2 follows suit, then, you know, once things are getting back on their feet and more solidified, then maybe they can revisit the Green Lantern Corps idea.
Yeah.
Because success breeds confidence, and then things will follow. So I think down the line, that's a possibility. Right now, I think focus on, you know, to me, you got to focus on the characters you have, you know, that you're working on, and also getting the Batman and Superman, you know, in the right place, and then you can go off and do these other things. And don't get me wrong, I want a Green Lantern Corps movie, I really do. So it's not coming from a place where I don't want it. I want it. I just understand that if it's going to take a handful of years, so be it. Speaking of Superman. A longtime listener of mine, Stephen Marshall, wants to know what Henry Cavill's contract situation with Superman is. And furthermore to that, Mario, just give us what you've heard in general regarding Superman going forward.
Well, you know, he's got one more contractual appearance, right? And we know, I mean, I reported that he's going to be popping up in Shazam. I don't know in what capacity, if it's a big thing, if it's a little thing. But, you know, I have a feeling it's just going to be a cameo type deal.
Sure.
But either way, he's got one more appearance. And right now, him and the studio, as far as it's been explained to me, is they're trying to iron out how this is going to work. He would like to have Shazam possibly be, you know, count as his final appearance, renegotiate his contract for the sequel and moving forward. You know, he wants to start with a fresh slate, probably get a pay bump, and just start a new deal. Whereas Warner Brothers seems to want to try to just count the cameo in Shazam as its own thing, have the next Superman movie be his final appearance, and then from there renegotiate a new contract now that they know what they have. You know, in other words, if this next Superman movie comes out and it does amazing numbers and they're very ecstatic with it, then he'll get a huge raise. If it comes out and it's kind of polarizing or divisive or somehow underperforms, then maybe they'll either not bring him back or they won't offer him as much of a raise in the renegotiated contract. But that's how it's been explained to me, that right now basically the two sides are trying to come to terms on a new contract. Cavill wants to renegotiate sooner rather than later, and Warner Brothers would love to get one more Superman movie out of him before they renegotiate.
But at least from what you're saying, is both parties are willing to they want more.
Yes.
More of Henry Cavill as Superman.
Absolutely. Yes. His run is not over. You know, they wouldn't bring him back for Shazam if that were the case. You know, both sides want him to be the DCU Superman. Right now, it's coming down to that sort of contractual pay type situation, the logistics of all that sort of stuff, which is not a fun topic. But, you know, that's where they're at.
All right. And that's my thing. At least that was my worry, you know, post Justice League and the reactions. It was like, I really hope this isn't the end of Henry Cavill as Superman, because I love his version of Superman. I think, you know, things could have been handled differently, but him himself as Superman, I'm a big fan of, and I know Jordan's a fan of him as Superman as well. My only question, and I want to get your just a little bit of speculation from you, going forward with the next, like, I love your idea with his appearance in Shazam. You had said in one of your reports that that you had a vision in your head about them kind of redoing the scene from the beginning of Justice League where he's talking to the kids, and then it's revealed that one of the kids is Billy Batson.
Yeah, because it's two young boys in the beginning of Justice League who are interviewing him nervously with that cell phone. So I thought, wouldn't it be cool if we see if in Shazam we see it from the other angle, and this is Billy and Freddie Freeman. And obviously they would have to reshoot it, and this time Henry Cavill would actually have a clean-shaven mustache. You know, no mustache this time.
Thank God.
But if they could redo that sequence, I think that would be wonderful. I think that would be a great way to sort of tie it all in.
I love that idea.
I love the idea. When I read it, I'm like, damn it, again. Why don't they hire Mario? Because two things I thought was, one, I want this scene now, and now two, it makes sense. Which means Warner Bros. Probably isn't going to do that. But now I want it. And so.
Yeah.
So
didn't Marvel do something similar where they said, like, Peter Parker showed up as a kid in, like, one of the.
Yeah, I mean, that's more so just like an Easter egg that Kevin Feige explained. It wasn't like something that was handled in a movie. But yeah, similarly, like, this would be similar to that in a way.
Mm-hmm. But the key takeaway right now is this, aside from more Henry Cavill as Superman. When he shows up in Toronto for his Shazam cameo, he will be sans mustache.
Yes.
Because to me, that's been his biggest villain to date in all three movies. That damn mustache. And it's Warner Brothers' big villain too. So if that thing doesn't get Oscar consideration, the mustache I'm talking about, doesn't get Oscar consideration for Mission Impossible, I'm going to get upset.
I agree. It'd be a huge injustice.
So, the other film I want to ask you about is that, because it's supposed to be somewhere on the horizon, is Suicide Squad 2. Where do you see that? How do you see that shaking out? What do you think? What do you think is going on with that? What's the scenario?
Well, I mean, the rumors were that it was going to start later on this year, like in the fall, like in October or November or something. But then there was that weird thing where Joel Kinnaman and Jai Courtney and Jay Hernandez were posting, I think, like on Instagram together, that they were training with their Suicide Squad, you know, trainer. And that was in January. People were wondering, oh, are they going to try to film it sooner? And, it's hard to tell, because right now everyone's busy. You know, Margot Robbie's preparing to do something else. Will Smith has a pretty, you know, busy slate this year. And I think, who was it? Somebody involved with the picture. It's failing me off the top of my head, but somebody involved with that movie just signed on for something else. Yeah, that films
Diablo got Magnum PI.
Yeah. Like, it seems like everyone's crazy busy. So I'm very curious when they're supposed to get this in. But, you know, the last I was told by someone, you know, who monitors production timelines and all this sort of stuff, Suicide Squad 2 was supposed to start filming this fall, in theory, I guess, to be released, you know, at some point in 2019.
Okay.
But, you know, I honestly, with how busy everyone is, it's hard to tell how they're gonna pull this off.
See, because my sort of vision of the slate, from what we know, it would be, this is just me spitballing because I know nothing in terms of what's actually going on, is that obviously this year we have Aquaman.
Mm-hmm.
2019, as of right now, would be Wonder Woman 2 and Shazam. Obviously, flip the order, but those would be the two films. And then 2020 to me would be, ideally would be The Flash or Flashpoint and Suicide Squad 2, which would then be my ideal situation of 2021 of having the Batman and a Superman sequel both in the same year.
Oh my goodness. Can you imagine if we can get a Batman and a Superman in the same year? That'd be the best year ever.
That's almost like printing money. if it's done right, it's printing money. Let me quantify done right printing money.
I think Adam and I have discussed this, Adam brought up that idea, and I talked about how I thought that they could market it in a way that, and I can't remember whether we talked about this on air or not, they could market it as like the year of World's Finest, and they could do some sort of World's Finest marketing in terms of that, like Batman and Superman. So That'd be cool.
That'd be pretty gorgeous.
So Warner Brothers, Mario and I have given you some good ideas marketing wise. My phone is ready to be answered. So anytime they want to call, I'm there. The other film, yes. The other bit of news I want to mention to you, and I have a theory that I want to run by you is, so this whole Batgirl, Joss Whedon has left the building, much to 3/4 of DC fandom's joy. He's no longer around. Now they're talking about, you know, Margot Robbie, in addition to Suicide Squad, has this idea of another Harley Quinn movie. There's about 12 in production or in some stage of development. And because I love Margot Robbie, I'd watch all of them, but that's me. But with Batgirl sort of directorless at the moment, and the, you know, Gotham City Sirens is somewhere up in the air. Wouldn't it make sense to have a Birds of Prey film with the Birds of Prey in with the antagonist of the Gotham City Sirens, with a film written by a woman, directed by a woman, in today's climate with the way the films are in superhero films? Would that not make sense, or am I just living a pipe dream?
So you're saying like the Birds of Prey should be like the Batgirl's villains, or no, what do you say?
Instead of a standalone Batgirl for right now.
Yeah.
And instead of just Gotham City Sirens on their own doing God knows
what. Oh, I got you. Yeah.
Make a Birds of Prey film is what I'm like.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, to me, that makes a heck of a lot more sense than a Batgirl standalone right now. You know, if they really are kicking around the, you know, all these different ideas, merging those two and consolidating them would be ideal in my eyes as well. Yeah, it's a good idea.
I don't know. I just think with all this talk about Harley Quinn films, different films, one of them's got to involve, in my head, it's like one of them's got to involve the Birds of Prey, because it just can't be the Gotham City Sirens running around on a, you know, on a, basically robbing banks and shopping malls and such like that. There's got to be something more to it. So,
well, the Gotham City Sirens held their own comic title for a long time.
I understand that, but comics are a different ball game in a sense than movies. You know what I'm saying?
And here's the thing. I just don't want, you know what my, I can't, yes, again, I this is something I can't remember whether goes. We talked about this on air or off air, but yeah,
you've mentioned it at some point on this show. I guarantee you.
Has it been on air? Okay. Well, I'll just reiterate it just in case, or if anybody hasn't heard that episode when I did mention it, my concern with that idea is that I don't want Catwoman portrayed as a straight up villain. My concern is that she would be if you're making it a Birds of Prey versus Gotham City Sirens movie. That's where my concern would be.
Yes, Mario, in case you missed those episodes, Jordan is in love with the idea that Batman and Catwoman are getting married. And he refuses to acknowledge any point of their history where she was actually a villain or a quote unquote criminal. And this
it's not that. No, yes, she was a thief, but I don't want her to be portrayed as a straight up villain. Yes, she started off as a thief, but
there are ways you could do it, I think, where she walks the line, is what I'm saying.
See, I like the arc of that, though. I like the arc of her starting off as a villain, then ending up more of an anti-hero, and Bruce bringing out the good in her.
Yeah.
So I kind of like.
I see what you're saying, and I agree with you to a certain extent, but at this point where we've got a Batman who's, I mean, he's late in his career at this point, so I feel like that transition should have already happened, first of all, but at the same time, I don't want her to be portrayed as so far onto the villainous side that, like, she starts off as a thief, of course, we know that. Now the question is whether they met on a boat or whether they met on the street.
Oh, God, again? You're going to quote that issue until we're blue in the face, aren't you? Every episode.
Oh, you better believe it. You better believe it. Well, not it's not just one issue. That's something that's played out throughout Tom King's run. But anyway, my point being, I would really prefer not to see Catwoman portrayed as a straight up villain, like. So, that's just...
Warner Brothers, if you're listening, don't listen to Jordan, listen to me. Me and Mary have given you good ideas up to this point. Stick with them, you'll be fine. $1 billion is somewhere down the line there in one of those ideas. Before we let you go and we plug things, Mario, because I usually ask our guests this depending on what we're covering in the episode. Because we've kind of covered both, I'll ask you both questions. First, who is your favorite live action Batman, and what's your favorite live action Batman film?
Oh, wow. You're putting me on the spot here, huh?
It's going to get worse the next question. Just wait.
Oh, I don't like it. I don't like it. Okay, let's see. My favorite live action Batman. See, this is tough. This is not fair. I quit. Oh, yeah. Oh, there's bad service. Oh, I can't. Let's see. Okay, based on what's here, based on what's actually happened, based on... Because it's tough, because I really loved Ben Affleck's Batman in BVS.
I agree.
Despite some of the issues, I actually really dug him a great deal. So you know what? Screw it. I'm going to say that. I'm going to say Ben Affleck is my favorite live-action Batman.
Does that go for Bruce Wayne as well?
Yeah. I granted, we saw Bruce at a very dark point in his life in that movie, but I could see the seeds in there that he also had the potential to be a slightly more charming Bruce as well, especially in those cat and mouse sequences he had with Diana Prince. So yes, I'm going to go ahead and say that the live action Bruce Wayne Batman dynamic from BVS, that is my favorite live action Batman.
And I do think Mario, we saw some of that once he was sort of brought back into the light at the end of BVS and also in Justice League, once he came out of that dark place.
Yeah. Then in terms of my favorite Batman movie, I would actually have to go to Batman Begins for that one. Everyone always talks about The Dark Knight, but I've always been more of a Batman Begins guy myself.
No, I'm right there with you. I love that film. I think it's fantastic. And then... the other side of the coin. Who is your favorite live-action Superman and your favorite live-action Superman film?
Oh, well, this is easy. Christopher Reeve and Superman the movie. That's it.
All right. Well, I caution you, if you listen to our Superman the movie episode, you will want to bash Jordan's head in with a baseball bat.
But that's all right.
Besides the point.
So I'm going to go leave you guys a negative review now because of Jordan.
So, well, no, just specify that the negative review is for Jordan. And actually, I remembered something. Remember, there was one of your reports that said, or I think it was last El Fanboy podcast, not the recent one, the one before, where your source said to expect something Superman related within the next week or two. I think what he was talking about, and I could be wrong, was the Brainiac reveal for Krypton.
That could be it. Yeah. That it looks like, if anything.
Did you see that?
Yeah, he looks amazing.
I know.
He does look amazing.
And folks, shameless plug, I will be reviewing Krypton for Revenge of the Fans. So when it premieres, you can find my my thoughts on the series there.
Yes.
Not only does he look amazing, but that Blake Ritson's voice, and I don't know if it's like modulated or something, but that's really menacing, and I dig it. In the trailer that they released.
That series jumped up on my radar. Like, I was already excited because I'll take anything Superman, especially if it deals with Krypton, because I love the Man of Steel Krypton sequence. So I was already on board, but that I'm like, all right, I'm in. But then again, I'm an easy mark. All they have to do is show me the cape, and I'm like, all right, I'm there. Yeah, I'm not that hard to please. Well, I am, but not in this case, not really. But so, Mario, we usually do we give our guests a chance to plug some things.
Okay.
Jordan, is there anything else you want to ask Mario while we have him here?
Oh, wow. Putting me on the spot a little bit.
Is there any burning question you want to ask him?
Not at the top of my head. I don't think I had anything. So I'll think of it as soon as we hang up. But
all right. Well, you can bother him on Twitter, and he can mute you. Like before we plug anything, we gotta have this quick little discussion. As most of our listeners and anybody who follows Rick Shue on Twitter will tell you, that he said that if he said on this very podcast, and I think he said it on yours, Mario, that if Henry Cavill appeared again as Superman and then later got his own sequel, that Rick would hold a party at his bar and buy us drinks.
So yes.
I want to know, give me, because I'm not much of a drinker, but I'll make an exception because it'll be on Rick Shue's
tab.
What drink should I select? What drink should I have rickshaw make me. That's what I.
Well, have. You should have what I'm gonna have. I call it the express train because it gets you feeling awful groovy awful quickly. It's a drink called a Manhattan. So I'm gonna ask Rick for a rye Manhattan up. So you should get one of those also.
All right, so
goes down smooth and then it'll knock you out. It's wonderful.
So I'll be getting one of those and we'll get one for Jordan too because he said that Jordan was invited to the bar too. So
all right, let's do it.
We'll all be cashing in on your time. That's what look. I'm excited for San Diego Comic-Con, but
yeah.
When we hear, because I'm going to choose to believe your, you know, to trust in your sources because you trust them. When we hear that Superman announcement, first thing I'm going to do is tweet Rick and say, get the checkbook out because I'm coming.
We're booking our flights to Texas. That's what we're doing.
Exactly. So Mario, first of all, where can people find you online if they want to chat with you or...
Well, I'm very active on the Twitter. Mm-hmm. My handle is I_M_MFR. Then I've also, you know, you could see the site that you write for. Adam contributes wonderful reviews to RevengeOfTheFans.com. That is the site for which I am co-founder and editor-in-chief, and I'm extremely proud of the work we're all doing over there. And I've got two podcasts. I've got the El Fanboy podcast, which is kind of like my solo ranting podcast that I put up every Friday. And then every Tuesday, I've got the Revengers podcast, which is the official movie and TV podcast at RevengeOfTheFans.com. On that one, I've actually got a small panel. It's myself and two other co-hosts, and we go over all the week's top stories and box office analysis, and it's more of a news show. So that's kind of all my stuff.
And both podcasts are great, and I'll just give our listeners a little tidbit. What I've noticed, Marion, maybe this is just me reading into it. It seems like on more El Fanboy podcasts than not, you always drop a little Superman tidbit. So for the hardcore Superman fans, you know, pay attention to that.
Yeah. All right. I think I've been doing that subconsciously, but that works.
All right. So there you go. But keep an eye out for that, folks. Jordan, where can people find you to talk about Batman and Catwoman and all the other crazy stuff that you're into?
Oh, hell yeah. Crazy stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean that seriously. I'm actually trying to get a psychiatrist on here, Mario, because Jordan likes Catwoman, the movie, and Batman and Robin. So this is why we need a psychiatrist on here. But go ahead.
Yeah.
Tell us where exactly, where can we find you, Jordan?
I would love to talk about the Bat-Cat relationship with anybody. You can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at BatFanJordanV to do so.
And if you want to talk to me, you can find me at Superhero Sci-Fi on Twitter. And check out my reviews at Revenge of the Fans. Mario, thanks a lot for coming on and giving us some DC films / DCEU clarity.
Yeah. My pleasure.
We hope to have you back on again once some of those scoops come to fruition and when we got some more Superman goodness to enjoy.
Let's do it. Thanks for having me.
Sounds like thanks, man. We got to plug the Batman Podcast Network and the.
Speaking of Batman on Film and Rick Shue's Healthy Tab, we are part of the Batman on Film Podcast Network. So if you want to hear other Batman podcasts in addition to this one, check that network out. And we thank Bill Ramey for hosting that. But until next time.
And keep talking because I'm looking for our iTunes reviews. And I'm going to say we'll request more.
iTunes reviews.
That's the gist of it. There you go. I was gonna say it a little bit nicer than that,
Jordan desperately wants more iTunes reviews. He wants you to tell him that Batman and Catwoman's relationship is gonna last forever. So if you can do that, that would
make if you do that, you'll be my new best friend.
And you could do that for us. That would be great. But until next time, we hope you have a fabulous week and an enjoyable weekend. So long, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that's a wrap, folks.